Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, saluti karab, guten tag, ciao, wee viva, cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison killitary industrial corporation. In the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-borne in the NSA, NRA, USA, wherever we are. Home of Uncle Sam, Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts. And the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Where are we? What time of year is it? The weather's still so beautiful in Northern California, but the days are getting shorter. And, gosh, it's doing the show now. It's going to be the 14th anniversary in just a few months. And what is it? Oh, Halloween is upon us this week already? Ah, okay. Oh, then this must be the Halloween show. Okay. Well, you know, this is a high-budget production. And John, I'm cueing the Halloween music, please, for underneath. I didn't realize I should have really gotten more prepared for this, but it's the Halloween show. Gosh, has there been any scary news since last Halloween? Let's see. That article in The Guardian a few months back. Yes, the sub-headline, which read, "People under 65 who eat a lot of meat, eggs, and dairy are four times as likely to die from cancer or diabetes, study suggests." And is that scary enough for you? No. Okay, people under 65 who eat a lot of the cadavers, the corpses, the decomposing bodies of beheaded murder victims. People under 65 who eat a lot of excreted embryos of mutilated birds. People who eat a lot of trans species mammary secretions, bubbling with blood and pus and urine. You know, those people. People who eat such a diet of the beheaded are four times as likely to be headed to the cemetery as a permanent resident. Well, you are what you eat, and you eat death. For how many hundreds or thousands of animals has your stomach been a graveyard? Every day is a real-life Halloween horror movie to me. I was at Whole Foods in San Rafael in the produce department just days ago. The smell of what seemed to be the worst BO wafting through the air. Wafting. And somebody seemed to have body odor passing me. And then I walked down the aisle. It was more the smell of vomit. The smell of death. Baby death. Yes, it was cheese, masquerading as produce, cheese, in the produce department. A trick, not a treat. It's disgusting. It's like eating babies, right? Cheese, you know, the little baby taken from mother, the dairy cow, who's raped on the rape rack, and then the baby is kidnapped and baby is killed. The mother is killed. That's not produce. That was a trick, not a treat. And I went to a local farmer's market, and there were people there with signs, "Shrimp Fest! Shrimp Fest!" This was no fest. From the point of view of the shrimp, this was a morgue. And the festive Shrimp Fest body snatchers made their stomachs into the burial ground for just a few of the 100 billion shrimp farmed annually.
Yes.
100 billion murder victims. Some of them at a shrimp fest. Every day is a bloody reality horror movie for the 176 billion animals farmed. Cloaked in the costume of food. Trick or treat? 176 billion? Is that enough blood for you? Enough real life terror? 18 Halloweens have come and gone since the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey studied 6,381 adults over 50. The flesh eaters who consumed high levels of animal protein were four times as likely to die from cancer and heart disease. And double toil and trouble, they doubled their chance of dying from any disease. That's your diet of animal sacrifice. A trick. But going vegan is the treat. The study found that, quote, the overall harmful effects seen in the study were almost completely wiped out when the protein came from plant sources such as beans and legumes. Go vegan or die. Go vegan or die. Death to Americans. Death to Americans. No, that's not some terrorist slogan on an ISIS picket sign. No, it's basically a summary of just about every menu at every restaurant in America. Death to Americans. Here, kids, have another plate of death. Not just for Halloween, but every day. Moms and dads in a trance, taking their innocent children to the nearest slashed food restaurant, brainwashed by a demonic clown who isn't in costume just on Halloween. He's there to trick your children every day. Death to the children. Death to the children. Again, just a summary of the kids' menu at any of these cutthroat slashed food restaurants. Where every item on the menu is a product of someone having his or her throat cut. It makes one wonder, who is a bigger clown? Ronald McDonald or Wayne Pacelli, Chief Executing Officer of the Humane Society of the United States? Ronald McDonald tells us that if someone's throat is cut, that's a Happy Meal. Wayne Pacelli tells us that if someone's throat is cut, that's a humane and sustainable meal. There is no one more adept at tricking the public and treating themselves to a fortune in blood money than McDonald's and the Humane Society of the United States. Both a bunch of diabolical, cutthroat, deceptive clowns. Hey, it looks like Larry wants to be in on the action. Larry, now you're killing me. Larry, the Quaker Oats man on the label, has decided to wear a milk mustache or a milk pustache for his Halloween costume. That's pretty scary there, Larry, Quaker Oats man. Yes, in the great Humane Society of the United States tradition of selling out, Larry and Quaker Oats have decided to trick the public into making its relatively healthy product, oatmeal, using bovine mammary secretions in its preparation, suggesting that Larry, you know, like the dairy industry, thinks you should be a blood-sucking vampire too. And is that in the PR Newswire, the story about Larry, the iconic? Yeah, it says here, PR Newswire. For the first time since 1877, the Quaker Oats man, affectionately known as Larry, is donning a new accessory, the iconic milk mustache. So this is since 1877. Now the company decides to go to the side of evil. And, you know, milk is full of blood and pus. So, it would make you a blood-sucking vampire. And then, Walter Longo, director of the Longevity Institute at the University of Southern California, wanted to suck the blood out of middle-aged humans. Well, he didn't actually suck their blood. He drew it and then studied it and confirmed a concept discussed frequently on this program in the past. He found elevated levels of insulin growth factor. That's a hormone in dairy. People consume it when we consume dairy. Elevated levels of insulin growth factor corresponded to higher cancer risks. As we've mentioned in the past, IGF grows cows really big, really fast, and seems to have the same effect on tumors in humans. And so there you go. Pretty scary, all of this, isn't it? It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. As I said, every day is pretty much Halloween to me. Coming up on today's program, well, I think we'll start the tradition of having a guest each week who's going to be a speaker at the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming March 2021 and 22 of 2015 at the Marina del Rey Marriott. And you can register right now at worldvegansummit.com. Cindy Sheehan will be our guest on today's program, the Peace Mom, and we will be talking to her. I thought I was going to be talking to Cindy, the gubernatorial candidate. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Are we at the break, John? We might be. Ah, okay. All right. So, anyway, so we have Cindy Sheehan coming up on today's program. And I was all concerned, you know, Go Vegan Radio is a nonprofit organization. I was all concerned that I would be, having to deal with election laws and having a gubernatorial candidate on the program. But you'll find out why I don't really have to worry about that. Okay, do register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And I want to talk a little more about McDevils coming up on today's program. Cindy Sheehan coming up, and next hour, Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. On Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And I invite you to register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, worldvegansummit.com. Coming up on today's program will be Cindy Sheehan, one of the speakers at the event. I'm still, you know, I'm really upset with Quaker Oats right now. I really feel betrayed, you know, the way that the animals have been betrayed by, you know, the Humane Society of the United States and Mercy for Animals, Farm Sanctuary and Defense of Animals, Compassion Over Killing, all of those who partnered with the egg industry. Well, now you have the Quaker Oats man, Quaker Oats partnering with the dairy industry. And Larry, the Quaker Oats man, is wearing the milk mustache now on cartons. And reading from PR Newswire here, it says, it's all part of a partnership between America's milk companies, dairy farm families, and Quaker Oats that's designed to encourage Americans to make their oatmeal with low-fat milk instead of water and serve it alongside a glass of milk for a boost of protein. Now, never mind that the China study, the largest study of diet and health ever, and Professor T. Colin Campbell say that the dairy protein is the number one carcinogen to which Americans are exposed. Forget about the study that I quoted earlier in the program and, you know, practically week after week. This is marketing to make your family sick. It makes me sick. You know, it says here in the PR Newswire, the Milk Mustache ad featuring Larry's new important accessory. Will talks about it debuting as part of People Magazine's Best Dressed issue, which hit the newsstands last month. In addition, the image will be featured on Quaker Oats canisters, making this the first time a Milk Mustache has made its way on shelves in the grocery aisle. Quoting here, Quaker has encouraged consumers to lead a healthy lifestyle for more than 135 years, says Justin Lambeth, chief marketing officer of Quaker Oats. Apparently, Quaker has decided 135 years, that's enough. You know, okay, if you haven't caught on by now, too bad. We're taking money from the dairy industry. So, Justin Lambeth continues saying here, quote, with Larry sporting a Milk Mustache, families will be reminded to start their days with this ultimate breakfast powerhouse. The added benefits of milk plus old-fashioned Quaker oatmeal. The Quaker partnership with America's milk companies highlights the nourishment, including high-quality protein and whole grains families need for successful days. What this is doing is, it makes the very unhealthy cow's milk seem more healthy because the oatmeal is there. You know, this is insane. So, what's it talking about here? Research shows that few Americans prioritize breakfast as part of their daily routines, with approximately 1 out of 5 Americans skipping breakfast. Okay, that's fine, you know. But then it says a breakfast of whole grain, old-fashioned Quaker oatmeal made and served with low-fat milk delivers 21 grams of protein. Wow, that's pretty dangerous right there. Animal protein is dangerous, deadly. We just talked about that. Let's see. He says, milk is a natural source of protein. Yes, and a natural source of cancer. A nutrient that half of Americans are trying to increase in their diets. Why? Well, I mean, you can get protein. Protein is everywhere. There's protein in broccoli. You know, there's protein. Well, get your protein from beans, legumes, everything. Bananas have protein. There's no protein shortage. Why do you need more deadly animal protein? So it says here, oatmeal made with milk is delicious, easy, and affordable way to get protein and other key nutrients in the morning. Doudash offers additional tips to make it with milk, including tasty ingredient swap. Making oatmeal with milk is easy by swapping milk for water, ounce for ounce. Since the milk starts out cold, you may need to cook the oats a little longer than listed on the package. Then it says add 8 for 8 cooking oats with 8 ounces of milk or 1 cup instead of water adds 8 grams of high-quality protein. I guess, you know, who's going to be happy with this? I suppose the oncologists. The oncologists who have to make their yacht payments should be happy with Larry wearing the Milk Mustache. It just goes on and on. It's sickening. The Quaker Oats has found a way to make oatmeal sickening. Congratulations. Okay, we'll continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. At GoVeganRadio.com, you can support the program with a tax-deductible donation by clicking Donate at GoVeganRadio.com and register now at WorldVeganSummit.com. GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and Facebook, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden. We are grooving on a Sunday afternoon. We groove every Sunday afternoon starting at 5 o'clock. We go until 7 p.m. Pacific time. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com. We are syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. Happy to be with the network. And Our next guest is, Cindy Sheehan, who's been a regular guest on this program, the peace mom who came to worldwide attention when, after losing her son in the war in Iraq, set up Camp Casey outside the Bush residence in Crawford, Texas, to ask why, to ask for accountability. She's a founding member of Gold Star Families for Peace. She's been an activist for peace and social justice and vegan issues for a long time. She hosts Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I've been a guest on her program, CindySheehanSoapbox.com, and she's authored numerous books, among them Peace Mom, A Mother's Journey Through Heartbreak to Activism, Dear President Bush, Not One More Mother's Child, and holy cow, I'm noticing the World Vegan Summit and Expo is just about 5 months away, and so I think now every week we should have at least one guest who's going to be a speaker at that event, and Cindy will qualify for that. We're going to be at the Marina del Rey Marriott, March 20, 21, and 22. You can register now at worldvegansummit.com. I was planning on having Cindy Sheehan on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden around this time, thinking that we'd be just days away from an election wherein Cindy Sheehan would be a candidate for governor of California. You know, I was worried about, you know, conforming to election code guidelines. You know, Go Vegan Radio, which produces the show, is a nonprofit organization. I didn't want to give the appearance of an endorsement for a vegan peace activist candidate for governor, you know, while the incumbent Democrat is some pro-fracking environmental who nominates wildlife commissioners who are horrendous, who, you know, who's... and I was, you know, worried about, you know, what the Genesis Communications Network would think. GCN, I have a candidate on now. Would Alex Jones have to have, you know, Governor Brown on his show? But I guess, you know, I'm ignorant about politics. I guess I should have realized that politicians will make sure no decent person ever really gets close to office. So, Cindy, I didn't know that you're not going to be on the ballot in California. I thought you were running, but what do I know?
Well, hi, Bob. Yeah, California, a lot of people don't know this, Bob. don't feel alone. I got an email maybe like a month ago or 6 weeks from a producer at KGO asking me to be on a gubernatorial debate. And I was like, we have all the losers on to debate each other because, don't you know, we have something called the top two primary here in California. And there were 15 candidates running in the primary, and I came in 7 out of 15. So that's not happening. And, of course, it's in every office in California except for the presidential races. I'm not sure about local, you know, school board or city council races or anything like that. But I think because those are nonpartisan, for every partisan race in California, that means when you run with a party, the top two vote getters in the June primary move to the November general election. And since this was voted in by the voters, who actually probably had no idea what they were voting for in 2010, it's always been a Democrat and a Republican, or two Democrats or two Republicans. And, of course, I'm with the Peace and Freedom Party. And, yeah, it was definitely designed to keep third-party independent people off your ballot. If this was a regular election where in the past we had each party nominate their candidates either through a primary or through a nominating convention, I would be on the ballot in a couple weeks, or not even a couple weeks, like 9 days. I would be on the ballot, and I would be the candidate for the Peace and Freedom Party.
Wow. This is really somewhat shocking to me. I think I'm following politics, and then this comes along, and I don't even realize that it's basically eliminated third parties, it sounds like, right? Because it's always going to be
really
Democrat
has.
Or Republican, which is really one party.
Right.
It's a one-party system
anyway.
And
we have this open primary where you can really vote for anybody, but it's going to be the people with the most money and the most backing that are going to go on to the top two. And so it's significant because we need to get this overturned here in California. But California, Washington, and Louisiana are three states that have it right now. Tuesday, a week from Tuesday, Oregon has Measure 90 on their ballot, which is the same thing. So if you have any listeners up in Oregon, they must vote against Measure 90. And it's so significant to the establishment that Michael Bloomberg from New York donated something like $65,000 to the yes on Measure 90. Why should Michael Bloomberg care about Oregon politics?
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is amazing. It kind of enhances the dictatorship in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm shocked, but I don't feel so bad. I mean, KGO is like the big news station in the Bay Area. So
do they have a guy named Brian Sussman on it?
On
KGO,
sure.
Do you know? Because
I'm not
that
sure.
Might be the show that invited me on. And when I replied that, well, I'm actually not on the ballot because of the top two, I never heard back from them.
Well, it wasn't long ago. I was at an event and somebody handed me a flyer for your candidacy. So I said, well, how's she doing? You know, and she said, oh, great. You know, so there were still
since
people
June?
Campaigning.
And since June?
I think so. I think, yeah.
Oh, huh.
You know,
yeah,
so.
No, I haven't been on the ballot since June. But some people say they're going to write me in. But, of course, write-ins have been eliminated from the state of California, too. So if you write anybody in, then they immediately toss your ballot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
this is democracy. This is what democracy looks like, right?
Yeah, this is what democracy looks like. It's scarier by the day. So, and I mean, you've attempted a few times in the political system to, I mean, you ran for Congress and vice president and all. I mean, like, you're seeing, you must see the ugly, you're always looking at the ugly side of life here, if you're dealing
with.
Oh, it
sure is, yeah, absolutely. You know, when I ran against Pelosi, it was 08, top two was not in effect, but I came in second. So, you know, if it was in effect, I would have been able to go on to the November elections. But there's another thing in California. When I ran for vice president, it doesn't apply to presidential politics. The top two. So we were on the ballot in November. But yeah, it is.
Like you said, if the top two are Democrats, then two Democrats run for the office. If the top two are Republicans,
it happened. And what does it really matter? I mean, for governor, for example, we have Jerry Brown, who you said is pro-fracking, he's pro-prison industrial complex, he's pro-privatized education, he's, you know, pro-being hard on crime, which really just means, you know, racism and we the people get the shaft. But he owns over 1 million shares of Jack in the Box. So I don't know if he's a vegan or a vegetarian, but he owns one of the biggest purveyor of, you know, disgusting food in the state. But anyway, and then the other guy, his name is Neil Kashkari. He worked for Goldman Sachs, and, you know, I like his social positions a little better than I like Jerry Brown. But who do we don't have a choice. You know, I'm going to go in, because I always vote, I'm just going to vote and put a line across it and just put no way or no confidence or something. I know they'll throw my ballot away, but really, how much do our votes count anyway?
Not for much, apparently. That's why I'm just trying to get everybody to go vegan, because what's the point? I mean, you know, nothing. These people, you know, when they run for office, they, you know, they put on a mask and pretend, you know, like they care, and then then we see, you know, I mean, you were a critic of Obama long before, you know, the luster wore off and everybody was, you know, and even now, the fact that he's a Democrat, he gets to keep on doing wars. He gets this, you know, oh, we were uncomfortable that the war ended in Iraq, so we needed a new one just weeks later. I mean, what,
that must be. It's pitiful, and that what it is about the empire is going to keep doing what the empire, you know, what the trajectory is. But what is really sad is that there's very little opposition to it, and it's pathetic and it's disheartening that the same people who oppose Bush for the same things are defending Obama. Mm-hmm. And so, how are we ever going to change
for even worse policies?
It seems. Myopia.
Right. I was saying anybody but Bush, anybody but Bush. But I have to say, like, anybody but Bush except Obama, you know?
Right.
And I think we're getting another Bush. Did I just hear on the news a little while ago that Jeb Bush looks to be. You know, it's the same families. We go from the Bush to the Clintons to, you know.
Well, we'll probably have a Bush and a Clinton running in 2016. Hillary and Jeb, they would be the very likely nominees for their parties.
It's amazing that those are the only it's amazing how those are the only two families who are qualified to create the mess that we accept, you know. It's really crazy.
Exactly.
Now Governor Brown in California, you know, he says, "Oh, it's climate change, global warming, so and we have a drought." So Governor Brown's suggestion is that Californians decline a glass of water when they eat at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. his way. Now, mm-hmm. you, Cindy Sheehan, as a vegan, in the food growing process, you needed 10,000 gallons of water to grow your food last year, and a meat eater needed, or the people who Jerry Brown has stock, you know, he hopes the people come and they needed 320,000 gallons. So you saved 310,000 gallons. Governor Brown would have needed 4 million customers at restaurants to equal what you did just by being a vegan. We have to take a break. We'll continue with Cindy Sheehan on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Register now, worldvegansummit.com. Cindy Sheehan will be there. Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Twitter at goveganradio. We just had our 10,000th follower join us on Twitter. And on Facebook, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And today we are talking to Cindy Sheehan. She and I, some months back, had dinner at a great restaurant in the Bay Area in San Jose, Vegetarian House. It's a 100% vegan restaurant. If you're in the Bay Area, I recommend you head on over because it's one of the best restaurants in the world with an amazing menu, international cuisine. And if you have an event coming up in the Bay Area, Vegetarian House will cater and make it that much more special, whether it's a business event, a social event, you're getting married. The website is vegetarianhouse.us, Vegetarian House at 520 East Santa Clara Street. You'll love that restaurant. Head on over there. And Cindy, we're looking forward to seeing you at the World Vegan Summit and Expo March 20th, 21st, and 22nd at the Marina del Rey Marriott in the Los Angeles area. And when people are curious about the connection of peace activism and veganism, what are you saying to them?
Well, you really helped me make those connections because I was a vegan vegetarian a long time before my son died and before I became a peace activist. You know, to me, it was very, unthinkable to eat another being, right? But not only that, Bob, but I see a lot of people who are like animal rights activists. They're against circuses, they're against killing big game animals in Africa, they're against the abuse of of dogs and cats, and you know, we are all those things too, but they're not vegans. So to me, that, or even vegetarians, to me, that's just very, you know, it's a disconnect. And so I just love that quote you always say. I think it was Tolstoy, as long as there's slaughterhouses, there'll be battlefields. And so it's just a very, I think we have a, just a very top-down violent society, and we seem to like thrive and get our being, you know, we get our nutrition or we get our life from being violent. And so when we look at our government and every solution they have is violence, and then we look at a kid who gets jilted at school and then he goes and kills two people, or they say we love dogs and cats, it's crazy to eat or abuse dogs or cats, but it's okay to eat pigs and chickens and cows and things like that. Oh, it's horrible to eat horse meat is just you know, immoral, but it's okay to eat a cow. So that's why that's kind of how I try to tell people. And then I think the way our food is killed is so violent and torturous that I think you, how can you eat it without taking some of that into yourself when you eat it? Not just the hormones and the toxins and all those things that are you know, the food, meat is raised on, but the violence. How can we not, you know, internalize some of that when we participate in eating? In Korea, they raise dogs to eat, and they skin them alive because they say that adrenaline, when the dog is being tortured, makes the meat better. How can that not make a person bad when they eat that or torture the animal and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Right. And no so-called meat, you know, dairy, fish, or eggs come to anybody's plate without torture or violence or killing. You know, it's just not, they're not, you know, falling off a tree, you know, it's all,
right.
You know, I mean, it's always that. And since the last time I spoke to you, I see that our World Watch or World Bank climate scientists have told us that, I'll finish the thought on the other side of the break. We'll continue our discussion with Cindy Sheehan on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. You'll see Cindy at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register now at worldvegansummit.com. Greetings once again, and welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and you can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com. The programs are archived there. You can make a tax-deductible donation. You can also click the banners to World Vegan Summit, WorldVeganSummit.com. You can register there now. And also to Nature's Flavors, NaturesFlavors.com. And the Select brand, S-E-E-L-E-C-T, will be drinking organic Select coffee and tea at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And this is a totally vegan company, Nature's Flavors, with thousands of products, including Bertie and Bill's natural sodas and baking mixes. If you want sugar-free, gluten-free, chocolate vegan brownies, they got that too. So naturesflavors.com. We look forward to seeing them at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. We're talking today to Cindy Sheehan, who will be there at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And you know our famous peace mom, heroic figure, Cindy Sheehan. She has her her podcast, which is Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, cindysheehanssoapbox.com. I was a guest fairly recently in talking about environmental issues. And so, Cindy, since the last time we spoke, the climate specialists at the World Bank tell us that the only way to stop climate change in time is a massive shift. 50 to 85% of so-called livestock products have to go vegan by 2020, or 1,700 U.S. cities are under the risk of submersion. Pretty much anywhere where you are in California, you know, I mean, this is, it's a peace issue. Climate change, climate refugees, and all of this. You know, there'll be food shortages and droughts, and these are all peace issues. Cindy.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
question?
I don't know. They seem like I just ran out of gas. So these are peace issues. Aren't they, Cindy? You're the expert on peace issues. Yes or no? True or false?
Well, yes, true. And there's so many things that we can do. Go vegan. We can park our cars. We can, and you were talking about Jerry Brown once as just to reject a glass of water. Mm-hmm. Fracking. Look at fracking. You said Jerry Brown is in love with fracking. Millions of gallons of water per day per well.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So, you know, it's just that, yes, we need to start growing our own food. We need to, go vegan. So I'm going to say we need to go vegan, and it's a peace issue and it's an environmental issue. And I want my grandchildren to live in, you know, to have a peaceful, sustainable, healthy world to grow up in. And so that's why I am still fighting. I wish I could, I could retire. I wish everything
Don't we all?
we could just get together to like have a nice vegan meal and not have to keep in the struggle so much. But, you know, Bob, I just thank you for always, keeping this show going. I know how much you struggle, and, you know, people who promote peace and veganism and, you know, extreme environmental solutions, which is what we need, we have to struggle. We are not getting the foundation money. We're not getting the NGOs coming to support us because they're actually part of the problem. Mm-hmm. So just thanks for always doing this, and thanks for inviting me on and being my inspiration to keep on going with this.
Well, and vice versa. You know, I did go to New York for the climate march. I got a new megaphone there, and I knew there would be nobody there saying that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change. With all those groups there, all of those environmental groups, you know, they're all like the corporate, you know, one percenters, as far as I'm concerned, the environmental groups, the animal organizations, peace groups. Is that an industry also at this point? I don't even know what.
I call it the peace industrial complex. And there was really only one contingent there saying how environmentally disastrous war and the Pentagon are.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. They're just there because they're the environmental industrial complex, and they count on their funding and support. It was no demands. There was no demands. You know, I'm sure there was a lot of garbage there that was from donut shops and McDonald's and, you know, all those. They're going and supporting that kind of, you know, disgusting, toxic industries, violent industries. But I'm glad you were there, and I'm glad you were there to make that kind of statement, because it really is needed.
Yeah, I know we often look at how negative the world can be, but I noticed this on the VEX website, trying to look at the bright side of things. It says, Russia is conducting a massive McDonald's purge, and it says, that, you know, it says here, the Ukraine crisis may have settled into a phony truce, but the still simmering conflict between Russia and the West has opened along a new front, McDonald's restaurants, and it looks like they're they're just closing down like a gazillion of them, as you know. So something good is coming of this. Even the one that was even the one that was like the number one, you know, selling one, you know, in Pushkin Square is now is now closing down, being shut down.
Well, too bad it's because of politics.
I know, but you know,
at least they're being shut down.
Well, the bright side, the bright side of, you know, political, you know, conflict is, hey, McDonald's is closing down. So, yeah. So now, so what are you doing now? You were, I expected you to be governor and then appoint me a commissioner of health, and then I could have banned meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. But I don't know that that's going to happen now that you're banned from the...
I'm banned from the, from People's Choice.
Yeah,
well,
from the ballot.
You know, I have Cindy Sheehan's soapbox, and like you've mentioned, and I'm writing a new book called The Obama Files, Chronicles of a Prize-Winning Warmonger, and it's all my articles since 2009. Like you said, I was against Obama and his policies before it was fashionable, you know, back in 07, 08. So I'm writing that book, and I'm just trying to do anything to really get any kind of anti-war, anti-empire, really, it's against empire kind of sentiment going. And the best thing for the movement might be if Jeb Bush wins in 2016.
I was just thinking that. I just thought that when I heard that on the news, and I said, no, go away, but, and what do you mean by that? As I was just thinking the same thing.
Well,
but,
we'll have more funding and more help. You know, it'll be people who, they don't have any principles. It's based on, you know, hypocrisy and political partisanship, but, you know, at least we'll have some energy in our movements again. And it's just pitiful that you have to say that, because things aren't going to change. Obama's been a placeholder, like you said, for this oligarchy. But he's been able to do more than any president before him because he's a Democrat. He's the first black president. He knows how to pronounce nuclear for whatever reasons. You know, he's been able to get away literally with murder. And so I'm not sure things would change with Jeb Bush, but at least there would be a large opposition. And at least we would see some more faces come back or come into the movement. And so we just might have more help. It might not be so hard as it's been these last, like, however many years, 6 years now, so...
Right, it'll be the same policies, but you know, then we'll have the face of an enemy. We can have somebody to oppose. With Obama, we can't possibly oppose him, even though, you know, he's ripped up the Constitution, you know, and attacked journalism, you know, more than anyone really. He's just so beyond, you know, not even disappointing. You know, I didn't have high expectations, but I expected something. I don't know what I. Why do I even expect?
He's worse than I thought, and I thought he was going to be bad. So that's really saying something.
Yeah. And now we have another war that'll go on forever, right? I mean, that's how we don't even know who the enemy is. They have to create a new enemy every week, make up a name, staff the enemy and say, this is going to go on for a long time, you know? And
well, as an empire, there's only been at least about a dozen years where we haven't been at war. So, and things aren't going to change until we, the people, make them change. So, I mean, there's plenty of work to do.
Yes.
We can't quit yet.
It's never ending, and we better get everyone to go vegan so at least we have a planet so that we can, you know, attempt to make things better, I suppose. So
I'm really looking forward to being down there in March. So, and I'll start spreading the word, too, through our website and everything.
Oh, please do, yeah. And, the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and the website is worldvegansummit.com. Cindy Sheehan will be there. We're planning a big peace lunch that Sunday. You know, peace begins on your plate, and I think that day we'll be also celebrating the birthday of another great vegan peace activist, Cesar Chavez, whose birthday is the following week. So we'll have a big Mexican feast, vegan Mexican feast there. I wind up speaking sometimes at Cesar Chavez birthday events, and I ask people, you know, have you ever heard of, you know, what a vegan is? And, you know, they're not quite sure. I said, do you know anybody who's a vegan or has been? No, nobody knows anybody who's vegan. Well, you're celebrating somebody today. You know, the guy at Cesar Chavez Boulevard, the sign on the highway, he was a vegan, and he took as much pleasure in having people going vegan as to trade unionism, you know. And often at the events celebrating his life, there's nothing that he would have been able to eat. You know, so we'll honor him there at the World Vegan Summit
Sounds
and Expo.
Like fun.
And yeah, we'll just celebrate peace and you know, work at, you know, strategizing so that we can get as many people to go vegan as possible and see the connections that we can't oppress anyone. I guess we're out of time. Anything you want to mention in 20 seconds, Cindy?
Just CindySheehanSoapbox.com and go vegan.
Okay, terrific having you with us again, Cindy Sheehan, a true
Thank
hero,
you.
A true hero. We look forward to seeing Cindy Sheehan at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And register now, worldvegansummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And we invite you to join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register right this very moment at worldvegansummit.com. You'll be saying hi to the folks at Greenlight Meals there. Wherever you are in the USA, there's no excuse. You can go vegan because you can have delicious vegan meals delivered right to your door, home or office. And all you have to do is go to greenlightmeals.com. That's greenlite meals.com. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, desserts, smoothies, foods the kids will love. All there at greenlightmeals.com, greenlitemeals.com. And there are also plans available where you get nutritional consultation, weight loss advice from Melissa Bray. Check out the website, greenlightmeals, greenlightmeals.com, L-I-T-E. And we were talking about McDevils earlier and McDonald's, which really I'm happy to say is really taking a hit. You know, the increased tensions between the U.S. and Russia. Russia closing down lots of McDonald's in retaliation. I don't know, some weeks back, Cramer, you know, the financial guy on CNBC was saying that, you know, there's a sense around the globe that, you know, it's not right to be eating at McDonald's. He was talking about White Wave and its stocks going up 44%, that vegan foods were where things were really happening, and you know, the soy milks of the world. And so that was you know, that issue there is that people around the world are seeing that it's just not healthy to be eating at McDonald's anymore. Cramer was saying that people are getting wise to McDonald's and likened it to, you know, like a junk food junk bond. Social media, saying that social media is making it where, you know, you really can't eat that stuff anymore. I'm happy to say. So, you know, that's a good part about what's happening in social media. And then we see that Russia is banning Western food imports. Oh, and, you know, and you know, McDonald's apparently did horribly in its stock situation. Where was this? This was your McDonald's profit slump, sales fall, this being reported by AFP. McDonald's said that profits slumped in the third quarter as global sales fell amid food safety scandal in China and intense competition in the United States. So it's you know, any bad news for McDonald's is good news for, you know, for sanity. McDonald's president and chief executive Don Thompson was blunt about the results. He said, by all measures, our performance fell short of our expectations. And really, what parent would still, you know, bring his or her children to McDonald's? I mean, you know, we need to wake up a little bit, don't we? And also, as I mentioned earlier, Russia is closing down McDonald's. It's actually banning many Western food imports. This being reported in The Guardian also. Russia has banned fruit, vegetables, so-called meat, fish, milk, and dairy imports from the U.S., the European Union, Australia, Canada, and Norway, reported Russia's prime minister. Basically, that's you know, a big loss. It says Russia is Europe's second largest market for food and drink. Big loss there. And I don't care. I don't care if they don't buy milk, meat, dairy, fish, eggs. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and we'll have animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione coming up. You can support our program with a tax-deductible donation by clicking Donate at GoVeganRadio.com. Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio and GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And it is time for animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. He will have a rather large presence at the World Vegan Summit and Expo that Saturday. You know, we're going to be doing that March 20, 21, and 22, March 21st, Saturday morning. Professor Francione and Professor Anna Charlton will conduct a session called Defining the Abolitionist Approach. And then that afternoon, there'll be a grassroots vegan activism workshop. Session one, and then on Sunday afternoon, Grassroots Vegan Activism Workshop Session two, and in between, you know, another 40 or so speakers on many different categories, you know, from veganic gardening to world peace, and we hope you'll be there. You can register now at worldvegansummit.com. And how are you today, Professor Francione?
I'm fine, Bob. I'm feeling optimistic. It's an optimistic week. This week I spoke at Villanova University and then at Bucknell University, and in both places got a terrific reaction from folks who were enthusiastic about veganism, had people come up to me. I had one professor come up to me and say that she had been a vegetarian for 20 years and was going vegan, and got a lot of good reaction from students as well. Creative, nonviolent vegan education works, Bob. When you confront people with clear, rational, logical thinking about matters, it's really surprising, or it's not surprising, I guess, in certain ways, to see how they respond. But it's surprising, given what we're told by these large organizations, that, you know, that people won't understand. They'll react badly if you try to talk to them about veganism. So talk to them about everything else but veganism. See, that's the theory. The theory of the animal movement, the large corporate animal charity movement, is talk to people about everything in the universe except veganism, and then they'll go vegan. But you see, it doesn't work that way. You really need to talk with people about veganism if you want them to go vegan, and you've got to get them out of their comfort zone. You know, I mean, I had some really interesting conversations at both Villanova and at Bucknell, talking with folks about how, you know, we have these comfort zones where, you know, we think that, you know, that, for example, vegetarianism is enough. It's not. Vegetarianism is an incoherent position, and I explain that, and explain the idea that, you know, look, if you don't have to believe. I believe that humans and non-humans, all sentient beings, are equal for the purpose of not being treated as a resource. But you don't have to agree with me on that. If you believe that animals have some moral value, you are inextricably committed the idea that you have to stop eating them, wearing them, and using them. You certainly cannot. If you believe animals have any moral significance, even if you don't believe they have equal moral significance, if you believe they have any moral significance, then in situations in which there is no compulsion and no necessity, i.e., you're not on the famed desert island or in the lifeboat in the middle of the Atlantic, if you are not in a situation of compulsion like that,
there's always a hypothetical, though, right? They just want to get you with some hypothetical somewhere. You're on a desert island.
You know, I mean, I was asked that question in both places. What would you do if you were on the desert island? And the answer is, if I were on a desert island and I was confronted with a situation where there were no vegetables to eat and the only choice I could make was starving to death or eating a rabbit that was on the island, of course, that would raise the question as to what the rabbit was living on if there were no vegetable products on the island. Mm-hmm. However, you know, for hypothetical sake, you know, people eat, you know, humans eat other humans when they're in situation of starvation and after they haven't eaten in 3 weeks. So, you know, the next time you're on that desert island, I would never say that killing an animal, human or non, would be justifiable in that, even in that situation, but it might be excusable. That is, it's morally wrong, but we understand why, after 3 weeks of not eating, humans eat animals and they eat other humans in those situations. But if you ever find yourself in that situation, Bob, then we can talk about it, and maybe your eating the rabbit or the other human will be excusable, but it's never going to be justifiable. But in the meantime,
I think there was one plane crash in
there
was one plane crash in the Andes, I think. So that becomes,
yes, exactly.
Right?
That actually, there have been a number of instances where humans have eaten other humans in situations of starvation like that. But the other thing I wanted to talk about today that had a negative aspect and a positive aspect is Gavin Dingman. Have you heard about Gavin Dingman, Bob?
I have not.
Gavin Dingman. He's this 11-year-old kid who killed a he went hunting with his father and whoever else, and the kid shot, you know, used a bow and arrow, and he killed a an albino buck. And this is generating a huge amount of reaction with even the, you know, the kid's getting death threats. He's getting a lot of criticism. And I wrote an essay that I posted on my website, abolitionistapproach.com, in which, you know, this is a Michael Vick situation where you've got everybody angry at this kid for doing exactly what all of the people who are angry at him for do themselves, i.e. they're not vegans. And so I pointed this out, and then I did a couple of threads on it on my Facebook site. And I actually had to delete the threads on the Facebook site because of the violent comments that people were expressing. This is an 11-year-old kid. I mean, not that it would be justified if the kid was, like, you know, 111, but, I mean, it's wrong. I mean, you know, this is an 11-year-old child who has been told by his parents that, you know, killing animals is a good thing. And but the vehemence of the reaction that I have gotten to those threats was just remarkable in terms of the terrible things that were said about this kid. So I just, you know, one of the many problems with Facebook is that you can't shut a thread. You know, you can't say enough comments now, because I tried. I tried saying, you know, no more comments. I've had enough of this. No more comments. And, you know, had another, you know, in one of the threads, another 50 or 60 comments in which people were expressing violent violent fantasies about what they'd like to do to this kid, or how, you know, what a horrible human being he was, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, so I think that that's terrible. I mean, I think that's really terrible that people do that. And I think that, you know, Facebook, all you need is an internet connection and a keyboard, and you can have the most idiotic opinion in the world, but you're going to let everybody know it. And
I get a little fatigued from it sometimes. You know, I get a little fatigued sometimes from Facebook. So, yeah.
Well, but the good thing is, though, that the fact that a Gavin Dingman situation evokes the response that it does, or that a Michael Vick situation evokes the response that it does, or Andre Robinson, or Keisha Curtis, or any one of the other situations, or, you know, Mary Bale in Britain, who put the cat in the trash bin. The reactions are uniformly angry people, and they're widespread. It's not just a few people get upset about it. It's like, you know, many people get upset about it, and there's a big outcry, and there's a lot of coverage in the media, and blah 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 blah. And you know, look, I think some of these things have some really negative aspects. We've talked about them before. You know, the racism that you get in the Michael Vick and the Andre Robinson situation, and the, you know, the classism that gets expressed in some of these situations, but the generally negative reaction, the strong reaction that we see from people when they are looking at the issue of animal exploitation in the context of a particular animal, where people aren't thinking about the animals they eat, they're thinking about this one animal that now has a face and a person, you know, this animal now has a face, the one that Gavin Dingman shot, or Michael Vick's dogs, they now, you know, they have personalities, they, you know, they become identified, they get names, etc. And people get really, really upset about these instances, these particular instances of exploitation. And I think in many ways, Bob, that's a good thing. I mean, I don't like how it manifests itself as really nasty sort of attacks on people. And you know, I don't like that. I think that's really terrible. And I think that that's, you know, that's the bad side coming out, you know, the unfortunate side of the anger. The reaction, or the anger is the negative side, but the reaction, the emotional, passionate reaction to what people are doing when they're exploiting these individual animals that we come to empathize with or whatever, I think is a very powerful statement. It shows, Bob, that people they're aware. I mean, They understand what it means to say that it's wrong to inflict unnecessary suffering on animals. They understand that animals are members of the moral community. They may not know exactly what that means, or they may not really have thought through what that means. But people do get very upset about these situations. And I think that's a great thing, because you know what? Everybody who gets upset about Gavin Dingman, everybody who gets upset about Michael Vick or about Andre Robinson, as far as I'm concerned, is a potential vegan. And I mean, I really like it.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You know, I mean,
you know, it's because, you know, what's interesting is, you know, in when I give a talk at a place like Bucknell, I talk about people like Michael Vick. I talk about people like, as a matter of fact, I was focusing on Andre Robinson, the kid who kicked the cat in New York City, because his trial is coming up soon. And, you know, and people were talking about him, and people were talking about that case, and people were saying what a horrible thing. They were aware, the students were aware of Andre Robinson and what he had done. And they were aware, you know, they were angry about what he had done. You know, and so you can take that anger and say, what are you angry about? Why are you angry with this guy? And then get them to see that they're doing the exact same thing that they're getting angry at him for. So, you know, in a sense, I don't like these angry reactions, and I don't like the expressions of violence that go with them. But on the other hand, Bob, it is a really profound statement that people do accept that animals are members of the moral community, that they're not things, they're not Cartesian things that exist outside the moral community. They are things, they are beings who matter. They are not things, they are beings who matter. And that people realize that. And so now what we've got to get them to do is get them to take the next step, which is, if you really believe that, and again, I go back to what I said at the outset, if you really believe that, even if you don't buy what I, you know, the idea that I have, that animals, all sentient beings are equal for not, as far as not being treated exclusively as human resources.
Yes, you hear the music. So that means we will take a break and pick up on that thought with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Register now at WorldVeganSummit.com. We continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. It is our weekly commentary with Professor Gary Francione. And so, Gary, I guess when people see these episodes of individual animal cruelty, one animal, one person, is it that... things become more real when there's the individual face, when they're eating the hamburger, there's no connection to an individual, you know, there's the cow, but there's no, people don't see the animals when they're
yeah,
eating.
You know, at first, you know, I thought it was just, that it was just, you know, the reaction that people had to dogs and cats because we fetishize those animals in this country. But, you know, you see in the Gavin Dingman situation, that's a deer, you know, so that's a, you know, that's not a, you know, it's not the sort of animal people have wandering around their homes. And you see it in the reaction, you know, yes, there are people who support bullfighting, but a very small number. And you know, and you know, bullfighting involves an animal that we eat, you know, a bovine animal. So, you know, it just seems as though when people focus on the treatment of animals in an individual way, it becomes a more personal thing, and they get angry at what they perceive as the mistreatment of that animal, and they get angry at the humans who are thought to be initiating that mistreatment, and then the next step isn't taken. And why that happens, Bob, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not a psychologist, and I don't know that a psychologist could really tell you that. I mean, I don't know that there's one answer. I think that it's a cultural matter. We are so used to the idea that we eat animals that we don't really sort of think of the moral issues involved in eating animals. And I also think that, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's not a matter of that, you know, that the use of animals for food is somehow invisible to us, because that's what some people say, and I think that's nonsense. I think what we end up buying into is the welfarist ideology. I mean, we buy into this idea that, well, you know, yeah, of course we believe it's wrong to mistreat animals, but there are laws that protect animals that are used for food, and we have to improve animal welfare, and that's why I support all of these organizations. We have to support animal welfare, and, you know, but we can make the use of animals for food morally acceptable. That ignores the moral issue, that it doesn't really matter how well you treat them. It's wrong to kill them, particularly if you don't have to. But it also ignores the practical issue that we can never make the exploitation of animals humane. And I don't even know what that means, but we certainly can in any meaningful way. Whatever it means, we can't do it in any meaningful way. And so, you know, so I think it's complex. But look, I continue to believe that, you know, that these examples, you know, that Michael Vick, Andre Robinson, Gavin Dingman, they tell us something about the fact that our efforts, Bob, are not meaningless, and although the task is enormous, there's a real possibility, and we see this again and again. People care, Bob. What we've got to figure out is how to ignite the spark of caring in all of these folks who do care. They do care. We just need to help them to connect and to make, you know, to make the connections. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to be doing at the World Vegan Summit is talking with advocates about how to get others to make the connection. And it's something that, you know, we're all learning about as we go, because we've all been for so long stuck in that rut of trying to make animal exploitation more humane. And it's only recently, that we're seeing this grassroots abolitionist movement emerge that is saying the issue is not treatment, the issue is use. It's not how we're using them, it's that we're using them. And that's going to be, I think, and I hope, one of the primary messages we discuss at the summit. Are you getting excited about it?
Absolutely, definitely, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's going to be a magnificent event, and I think it's going to be one of those things that will go by all too quickly.
Yep, it's coming up 5 months from now. We're out of time. Everyone, register now, worldvegansummit.com. Register, worldvegansummit.com.